Hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio, and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. You're currently listening to Nevermore by UK. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, to go
One of the finest moments on UK's debut album there. Anyway, hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. Nevermore's such a great song. It's the second to last song on the first UK album. You've got Bill Bruford on drums, Alan Holdsworth on guitar, John Wetton on bass and vocals, and Eddie Jobson on keyboards and synthesizers. I love Nevermore so much. It's a Holdsworth composition that was then augmented by the band, and I feel like in that context, it is his masterpiece. The problem a lot of people have with Holdsworth's solo stuff is that it's pure fusion noodling with mind-bending solos and chords, but with the input from the other members of UK, they're able to take his weird and otherworldly chord ideas and basically shape and mould it into a sort of recognisable pop song. I love the ending bit. Bill Bruford did a post about the ending of that song recently where he was doing something like, oh, some favourite drum bits of his, and he said that the end of Nevermore is one of the favourite things he's ever done, and he confirmed that that end section is all live, no overdubs whatsoever, no click track, they're just feeling the power of those notes towards the end. I absolutely love that song. Moving on now to something which came out around the same time with a track from Rush's 1978 album Hemispheres. This is one of my favourite tracks off the album. The first time I heard Hemispheres, I was a little bit confused. It was the first time had ever actually listened to Rush, and the first thing I thought when Cygnus, the long song played on side one, I was thinking, wow, these vocals sound a lot like Yes, this is very strange. But then this song came on and I thought, well, you know what, this is really brilliant in its own right. This is The Trees by Rush.
Trouble with the trees, for the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
What I love about that song is that it's the transition phase for Rush, and that's what makes it so interesting. Is of course they did 2112, that was their kind of breakthrough across the world, and they were kind of, you know, very into the, what we would say, I guess, the traditional form of progressive rock, where it was long songs. You know, every album had long songs, and it included Hemispheres, and that song is one of the transitions to the kind of 80s era of Rush, the Moving Pictures and Spirit of the Radio kind of era, where they were kind of going more towards packing more sections, but shorter sections into short compositions. They were trying to basically pack as much punch as possible into a really short song. Like in that, they've got the kind of acoustic intro, they've got the odd time signatures, they've got the heavy bits, they've got a really nice guitar solo, and they've got some cool synth work, all contained within 4.5 minutes, which is just absolutely genius. Next up, we have a track from one of my favourite Yes albums. Now, Yes are no strangers to controversy. It seems pretty much with every single album from the Yes album onwards, there's been, you know, there's something big happening about the album. For example, Steve Howe joined, they did the Yes album, they basically fired the original keyboardist Tony Kaye, Rick Wakeman comes in, they do Fragile and Close to the Edge, then they decide to do Tales from Topographic Oceans, Rick Wakeman hates it, Rick Wakeman leaves, they get in Patrick Moraz, they try to do Close to the Edge Part 2, except the jazz version in Relayer, and that doesn't work, but then they come back with Going for the One, which is a great album with the classic lineup pretty much minus Bill Bruford, and then they do Tomato, and then Rick Wakeman and John Anderson have kind of left or been ejected from the group, and they do an album called Drama, which is basically Yes featuring the Buggles. It's basically Steve Howe, Chris Squire and Alan White, with Jeff Downes on keyboards and Trevor Horn on vocals. I think it is one of Yes's most progressive albums because it's so different to everything that's gone before, yet it's still got that unique Yes signature throughout. This is my favourite song on the album. This is Machine Messiah by Yes.
We'll be right back.
desire the mindless. Search for a higher controller. Take me to the far and hold me. Show me the strength of your singular eye.
Drama, I think, is just a great album. I think, you know, regardless of the personnel, it's fabulous music that just sounds like, yes, it sounds like more hardcore. You know, they are not doing punk, you know, they are not doing new wave, but they're taking notice of those things. You know, they're going in one ear and they're thinking, let's be a bit more aggressive. And I love Steve Howe's guitar sounds on that. Steve Howe forever will be associated with a squeaky, clean guitar tone, like a song on Yours Is No Disgrace with a tiny bit of crunch on it, but he goes all out with the distortion on the Drama album. It really fits the kind of vibe of the music, and I really enjoy it. Trevor Horn had a few problems being the vocalist in Yes. One of the main ones was that, unfortunately, the Americans seemed to accept it, but British fans were not very kind. Trevor Horn still has nightmares about being on stage and people shouting, "Where's John? What happened to John Anderson?" And I think he did a great job. There's some recordings of him singing the other Yes stuff, and he had the hardest job in the world replacing John Anderson, a singer with a ridiculous vocal range, and he did a sterling job, I think. Moving on now to a little bit of Pink Floyd with a song from the band's 1983 studio album, The Final Cut. Now, this is Pink Floyd minus Richard Wright, funnily enough. It's Michael Kamen doing the keyboards and orchestrations on the album, who did the orchestrations on The Wall. And I think this is one of their best songs of all time. I think it suffers a little bit from the Roger Waters-isms, if that makes sense. Like, you can tell that he and him alone has had input on this track, and David Gilmour's not really done a lot, because it kind of suffers a little bit in the arrangement department, which is what Gilmour is so good at. But regardless, I think this is one of the best tracks on the album. This is The Gunner's Dream by Pink Floyd.
Goodbye, Max. Goodbye, Ma. After the service, when you're walking slowly to the car, and the silver in her hair shines in the cold November air, you hear the tolling bell and touch the silk in your lapel. As the teardrops rise to meet the comfort of the band, you take her frail hand and hold on. What's more, no one ever disappears. You never hear their standard issue kicking in your door. You can relax on both sides of the tracks, and maniacs don't blow holes in bandsmen by remote control. And everyone to the law. And no one kills the children anymore. No one kills the children anymore. Foreign field, the gunner sleeps tonight. What's done is done. We cannot just write off his final scene. Take heed of the dream. Take heed.
What I love about that is that he captures the grimness of the mortality of soldiers perfectly with that chord sequence. What it is he's using like the main kind of, you know, every song has a thing running throughout it that makes it that song, you know, that a unique chord sequence or something. The thing in that is the augmented sequence. So it basically goes G augmented up to E minor and then to C, and it's just this perfect, harrowing, horrible sounding progression. It kind of reminds me of the really nasty chord in the sequence in Us and Them, and it just kind of evokes that really unsettling nature. And Roger's vocal on that is just brilliant, especially that scream at the end. I don't know how he held it on for so long and it kind of fades away in one ear, but it's so, so good. I kind of wish that maybe that song would have been brought on in the classic era of Pink Floyd a little bit before that. Like, can you imagine how good that song would have been on an album like Wish You Were Here? Can you imagine if Wish You Were Here had a sixth track, and the sixth track was The Gunner's Dream as played and written by the 75 band? I can imagine that being really powerful. Now, Rick Wright is nowhere to be seen on the final cut. He'd been fired, or Roger Waters said he'd left, but at that point, so yeah, it's it does miss the Rick Wright touch, that album. Yes, the orchestra fills in that kind of thing, but it doesn't sound the same. It doesn't have that Pink Floyd sound that the 70s stuff did with all of Rick's synthesizers that he added to the songs. But in 2015 or 14, I think it was, David Gilmour released a solo album titled Rattle That Lock, and on that album was a track which acted as a tribute to the late Richard Wright, who passed away of cancer in 2008. And this, I think, is maybe David Gilmour's best solo song, because he really means it, you know, like, it's just so perfect, it's just so well put together. Basically, David Gilmour wrote this song, I guess it was around 2001, 2002, and he just played this piano part and recorded it onto a mini disc, and then a few years later he found that mini disc and listened back to it and decided to turn it into a song. This is A Boat Lies Waiting by David Gilmour.
Thank you. something I never knew. In silence I hear you, and the boat lies waiting. Still your clouds are flaming. That old time easy feeling.
What's really interesting is when David was making that album, he was being followed by a BBC film crew making a documentary called Wider Horizons, David Gilmour. And it gives a fascinating insight into his personal life and his working relationships. And basically it showed that the way he writes most of his solo tracks is that, like, that one he was on like a mini disc that he recorded. He just basically found that piano sequence and recorded it and then forgot about it and dug it out. And basically what he does is he goes into the studio. David Gilmour doesn't do lyrics. He can't write lyrics. That's one of his things that he admits. So what he does is he goes into the studio and he sings the song, but just the vocal melody, no lyrics. And then he puts it on his wife's iPod, Polly Sampson. And then Polly Sampson goes out for a walk and she listens to the tracks on the iPod and just writes the lyrics for him, which is a great thing. But she said as soon as she heard that piano part, she knew it was about Rick straight away. And Rick Wright obviously spent much of his life, much of the 1980s, much of his post-Pink Floyd career, sailing around Greek islands, and it's just such a kind of perfect tribute. It's one of those songs that just works perfectly well. You know, it's just got that perfect. It's about sailing and it's about losing somebody, and there's so many good rhymes about losing an ocean and drifting through the ocean. I think it's David Gilmour's best solo song. Now moving on now to a little bit of controversial Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And no, we are not talking about Love Beach. We are talking about Emerson, Lake and Palmer's comeback album, 1992's Black Moon. So basically, ELP got asked to do a film soundtrack in the early 90s and got back together just to do this film soundtrack. I think the film fell through or something, but they enjoyed being Emerson, Lake and Palmer so much that they thought, what have we got to lose? Let's just do another album, do a tour and have some fun. And they did that until around 1998, produced the Black Moon album in 1992, and everything was going great for the band. It's a bad album. There's no getting around that. But it allowed them to tour. It allowed them to, you know, come back into the public eye. And I think that was a brilliant thing. And like all Emerson, Lake and Palmer albums, it has a classical adaptation, which is now very famous for completely different reasons, as BBC One's The Apprentice also uses this same piece of classical music as its theme song. Now, this version is so cheesy, it's so 1990s, but I really enjoy it. This is Romeo and Juliet by Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Thank you.
So cheesy, so of its time. You can just hear the year 1992 spring off Keith Emerson's synthesizer as soon as the track begins. Now, one of the other gems on Black Moon, which didn't happen very often, was that Keith Emerson got a solo piano song. Basically, you know, he's got like moments like on Take a Pebble where it's just a piano solo and things like that, but he got his own full-blown just track for him to do whatever he wanted on the piano. And this, I think, is one of his finest piano pieces of all time. This is Close to Home by Keith Emerson. I think that's one of his greatest pieces of all time. Love the false ending there. I think it's just pure Keith Emerson brilliance. Now, one of the best things about being a prog fan is arguing about whether or not a song is prog. This is definitely not prog, but it's just a great song, and I thought I would slide it into this week's show. The only thing that kind of makes it prog is the weird chords it uses, but I think it's one of the best and most inventive hard rock and pop songs of all time. This is Everlong by the Foo Fighters. One of the all-time greats there from the Foo Fighters. We're now unfortunately nearing the end of this week's show, and I'd like to close with a bit of a weird David Bowie number from his 1978 live album Stage. This is Alabama Song, performed by David Bowie. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. to say goodbye. We've lost our good old mama and must have whiskey, or you know why. Oh, moon of Alabama, it's time to say goodbye.
Show us the way to the next.